the crowd on its feet. They are absolutely silent.
Wow, harder than I thought. Racing and talking at the same time.
Welcome to World of Motorcycling, covering rider culture and the motorcycle industry with John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and Steve, the producer, Johan.
Welcome, everyone, to another hour of World of Motorcycling. I'm Walt with my co-host, John, and also Steve. We've got a great show lined up for you. We always start this segment off with Inside the Helmet, where we do a ride-by overview of what's happening in the motorcycling industry. And one of the things we're finding out is that Harley is not doing so good.
Not so great.
So,
well, I think we could talk a little bit later. Since we don't have a guest on tonight, I thought we would take that segment and do a little. I was reading an article just about the Harley guys.
Yep.
And so maybe we'll chat about it. But I did come across a few things. And this is really interesting. The all-new 2018 YZ65, this is a new youth-sized Honda Yamaha, focused motocross bike will be available in Team Yamaha Blue and arrive at Yamaha dealerships starting in April 2018, making it eligible for this year's Loretta Lynn's Amateur Motocross National Championship. Now, here's an interesting thing, though. This is a small, little, teeny YZ65.
Yeah.
How much do you think this thing's going for? Just off the top of your head, what do you think this thing's going for?
$3,500.
Okay, Walt, what do you think? Just think of a youth-size motocross bike.
Probably maybe $4,000 to $5,000. Probably more.
Just pull the microphone over there.
Okay,
Walt.
I got it.
There you go. Well, you're close. $4,599.
What does Walt win?
Well, he wins the intelligence award because he knew this thing would be well over its worth in pricing. Now, wow. I want to compare this to...
That seems like a lot.
It does. And now look at this. I went to the Royal Enfield website, and I pulled up the Royal Enfield Classic 500. Nice full-size bike, 500, been around forever. How much do you think that thing's going for?
$4,500 to $5,000.
Yeah.
Well, a little more, $5,499.
All right.
So, $1,000 more, you have a nice street bike that's a classic.
Yeah, but it's too big for your 8-year-old.
I know. But I am telling you, there is a disconnect when you roll out something that's $4,600 before tax and license or whatever, before tax.
Yeah.
That's... There ain't no way a lot of people are going to put that kind of money for a little teeny bike. I'm sorry. That's way too much. Yeah. I'm like $3,500 maybe. Why not about $2,000?
Yeah, that'd be a better price point.
It really would.
Well, it depends on how much it costs to make it and how much percentages
I know, but when they rolled them out, remember we had, I forget the guy's name, who had a dealership in the 70s, and he said he'd get these small little scramblers, these small Hondas, and they'd go out like hotcakes, these 100s and stuff like that. They were below $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people were just buying them like hotcakes because a kid that had a paper route could buy one and pay for it over a period of time. And now there's a kid having a paper route can't afford $4,500 for a little.
Yep. And there aren't many parents that are going to lay down that kind of money either.
So, folks at Yamaha, you know, it's I get it, but guys, there's a disconnect. There's a huge disconnect. Yeah. Now, congratulations to Brembo on the new Italian plant. Disc brake and brake pad producer Brembo SPA announced it has broken ground on a new manufacturing plant in Curno, Italy. The new building will host the Brembo's new carbon factory, a flagship facility for processing of carbon fiber materials for competition use. So it's about 23,000 square feet, they say. But that's cool. They're going to put in a factory in Italy. That is really cool. My buddy and his wife live in France, which is really close to Italy in that beautiful area. I'd love to go to Europe someday and travel around on the roads on a motorcycle. I think that'd be just phenomenal.
Yeah, sounds like a good time.
And then... But I want to say congratulations to Yamaha for 3 design awards. Yamaha Motor Company announced that it has its MT-10 SP motorcycle, the TMA X530 and the DX Sports Commuter and the MXA X300 Scooter have all received the international prestigious award of IF Design Award for 2018. And these awards have all been achieved in the product category, with this year marking the fifth year running for Yamaha Motor to receive this honor. So they're doing some things good for design. But, again, design is one thing. Building affordable bikes is another. And then another thing I came across was Smoky Mountain Harley-Davidson, located in Marysville, Tennessee, not Marysville, Washington, right up street from us, has been named the number one Bar and Shield Award winner for 2017. So congratulations, you guys. Harley-Davidson dealership earn points for each measure based on their performance. And it also has been named a Power 50 dealership by Power Sports Business each of the past 3 years. So they're doing something right.
They're selling a lot of T-shirts. I'm sorry. I take it back.
How close is that to Tale of the Dragon? Maybe they just got a lot of people coming by.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, T-shirts.
I think we need to go in it. We need to go out, do a Google and do a quick check on that. Because that's a perfect, might be a very good explanation of it. Maybe on the one end or the other, and it's kind of like the what.
Well,
are they?
I've had people ask me why in the world would anybody want to go to Tellico Plains, Tennessee. Well, as it happens, my in-laws lived there for a while with my sister-in-law, and you want to go to Tellico Plains because it's at the opposite end of the normal run of the Tale of the Dragon,
right.
And you just run it backwards.
That's right.
And so a lot of people go there. Just it's go cheap to stay. Forth. You just make a run.
Yep.
Turn around, make a run back the other way. Thank you very much. I've had my time, and off you go. You know.
Well, one last thing for Yamaha, they've made the top three tonight, is never mind that they've got high-priced little bikes for kids, they did have a record sales year. Net sales were $1,670,000,000 in yen, increased of over 167, well, it was 11% compared with the previous year, so they did 11% increase in sales.
Nice. Good
for them. So congratulations. I guess people like high-priced mini bikes.
But I guess.
Anyhow.
Well, there's our music. We'll be back in just a moment with more World of Motorcycling.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower Chrome and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower Chrome and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johan. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. where we'll be waiting for you.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377. Where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, a law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices, but hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the second segment of World of Motorcycling. Walt, Steve, and John here. For more about the show, please visit us at www.worldofmotorcycling.com. We'd like to start this section off with Behind the Bars, where we spend some time covering cool stuff, trends, new bikes, people, and more. So the online motorcycle news landscape has shifted yet again. In the last year or so, we've seen several online publications change their schedules or go away. But one of the biggies, one of the originals, motorcycle.com, has recently announced that their top two guys, their editor-in-chief and their director of Power Sports Editorial, Sean Alexander and Kevin Duke, are leaving.
Hmm. That's motorcycle.com.
Motorcycle.com.
Yep. Now, do you know who the parent company is at?
Parent company of motorcycle.com is now Vertical Scope.
Okay. They're quite a large magazine publication. Yeah. You know, again, it is a shifting in the wind. I call up companies and say, would you like to advertise on our show?
Yep.
And they say, budgets are already, well, not everybody. I shouldn't say that. I just started doing this. But budgets are tied up for the 2018. Sorry, we have no money. I says, you can't even pinch out a couple $100.
Yeah.
No, we're tight.
No, everything's tight.
If you haven't been noticing, the industry's not doing as well as we'd like it to. And we have to be very, very careful. And speaking of that, I noticed that within the racing world, two sponsorship changes. After 23-year relationship with Supercross, Parts Unlimited will discontinue its sponsorship at the end of 2018. And then 2019, Western Power Sports will become the official exclusive Power Sports parts and accessories distributor for Supercross. So one leaves, another came back. Remember with, what was it? It used to be Winston Cup, and then yeah. It became, what was the, it was a cell company who?
Sprint.
Sprint took Sprint them over. Yeah. And well, part of that was because, well, we don't advertise cigarettes anymore. Yep. And the other part is because the tobacco companies were getting hit hard. Sales are not as what they used to be. And they just couldn't pony out that kind of money. Well, Parts Unlimited is basically saying we got to move our money in other areas. And that's 23 years. God, that's a long time for a sponsorship.
That is a long time.
That's a huge long time. And maybe I can knock at their door and they'll say something with us. Anything else in the racing news there?
MotoGP, John? They're still doing their testing at various locations. So, but yeah, it's kind of silly season.
Well, and it says here the brand spanking new Moto America Junior Cup class will make its debut in 2018 Moto America Series, and it will do with a title sponsor, Liqui Moly.
Yeah.
Interesting matchup there. Junior Cup class replaces the spec class KTM RC Cup that ran in the first three seasons of Moto America, with a class now open to all manufacturers meeting homologation. Homologation. What's that mean again there, John?
Homologation. That's where they have to produce a certain number of motorcycles to establish it as a production model.
Okay. Thank you very much. The class, which is first rung on the ladder of the Superbike class for up-and-coming young riders aged 14 to 25, will make its debut in the Suzuki Championship Road Atlanta in April 13 to 15. So, again, trying to introduce those younger guys. Like Ducati comes out with a limited edition, it's like, well, you've got to have X amount on the showroom to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody else that manufactures these things, they have to have them out on the showroom.
Yep.
And I remember back in the 60s, that's what it was with the, was it NASCAR? With the cars, they had to do the same thing. So you'd have a few super birds out there, and you could get a fair lane with a 427 with a aluminum if you special order it. But Walt, any Farkles out there?
Any Farkles?
Any Farkles?
We have, there's a, they don't say what they cost, but they just talk about it. You can get wheels that actually look like they're wood. What they do is they paint it and with like the color of a wood.
Okay.
And then they put darker stuff over it that looks like the grain. and it's like bonded right in there and it's part of the thing. And so it looks like you've got wood wheels.
Wagon wheels.
You know, and then they can also do ones that look like carbon fiber, wood grain, flame imitations,
or
art
like
design.
They're like a special kind of wrap that they coat them and then they
well,
bake
what
it
they
on
do,
there.
What they do is they bond it. It's like powder coat the thing with the color they want, and then they have a thing that they do that goes on there that, I mean, this is before they put on the spokes. It's only spoked wheels.
Right.
And then they have a thing that goes all around the inside and paints on the, like, little designs that they're getting
okay.
in there. Huh. And then this stuff bonds, you know, irrevocably to the powder coat.
Okay, so when I was down visiting Mondo Perez at Denver's Choppers, I guess this was probably 4 years ago, I went to a shop in Vegas. He's now up in Reno. And that was something that he was working on, was special powder coating. And he had, like, it looked like a leopard and zebra and all these weird, wonderful colors. And it was special kind of powder coating system that he had invented. And I'm wondering if maybe he's hooked up with this company. I'll have to call him and find out if he ever did anything.
It looked really cool. And the first thing I thought was that this would look great on Sandy, because, I mean, the color would just match,
right?
Like the darker parts of it and everything.
Right.
And it just, but it was, you can get, once again, you can get it, anything you want. You can get ones that looks like it's like water. It's got like waves built into it or whatever. It's all kinds of crazy stuff that they've got. And it's, but, you know, it just, I don't know how much it costs. It may cost a small fortune. But,
well, they're constantly looking at, you've heard the Plastidip, which is for the cars and stuff.
Yep.
And that, so it may be similar to that, but it looks like it more bonds molecular structure. It's going to, because rims take a lot of damage. I mean, they get beat up. And if you can't just put some vinyl on there.
Right.
That'll scratch off. So, interesting. I came across this. Muckoff, a UK-based company, announced that it will launch its motorcycle range products in the U.S.
What's that called again?
It's called MUC-OFF, Muckoff.
Muckoff, yeah.
You Muckoff. As if they, the full line will be available in mid-February through Parts Unlimited. Known for their three-stage approach to motorcycle maintenance, Clean, Protect, Lube, the UK-based firm has produced products that have been highly popular throughout Europe. Among the key product offerings are high-performance, wet, dry, and all-weather chain lubricants. Additional products include Nanotech motorcycle cleaner, a biodegradable chain cleaner, motorcycle protectant, foam fresh, and a cleaner for soft materials such as helmet liners. So, again, it's a UK European product. It probably works really good. Muckoff, I love that. Like, as in, it's a play on words. But get the muck off your vehicle, or get the muck off of here. But you got to remember over there, they use toss off. Don't use a tosser. So that's their term for the other thing. Yep. So,
well, last night it was kind of funny because they had the Olympics on and the Sweden women were playing the Swiss women. And at one point, Pat was watching.
Was that hockey?
Yeah, it was the hockey game. And Pat was watching and playing with her cell phone both at the same time. And the guy goes, "Boy, the Swedes really need to get the puck out of there." And Pat, "You can't say that on TV." I said, "He said, get the puck out of there."
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because she
get your mind out of there.
She wasn't quite paying attention.
She wasn't quite paying attention, but boy, she thought she heard something was going to get them.
Got her
deep
attention
drive.
Right quick, though.
Oh, that's funny. Get the puck out of there.
Oh man. Hey, a couple of recalls I came across.
Yeah.
Triumph Motorcycles is recalling 2800 Thruxton and Thruxton R motorcycles, 2016 to 2018. The engine may stall if the throttle is opened or closed, is open or closed quickly while the clutch lever is pulled in.
Oh.
That doesn't sound like fun.
No, it doesn't.
And then Kawasaki is recalling certain 2016-2018 ZX-10R and ZX-10RRs. A high impact force may cause the transmission gears to break during shifting. That would ruin your day.
You know, I was reading.
Did you guys talk about the Harley recall last week?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Like 200,000 total worldwide
almost
like
a quarter
that.
Million.
But they
or
have a thing that came out. There are 10 U.S. states that are suing the EPA because they have reduced the Harley-Davidson emissions penalty.
What do you mean?
In other words, they had a penalty that they gave them because they said they were putting out too much emissions.
Oh, because of the aftermarket engine controllers,
right,
and exhaust
things
systems?
Like that. And they said that the Milwaukee-based motorcycle manufacturer agreed to pay a $12 million civil fine and stop selling illegal aftermarket devices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Justice Department cited a new policy by U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions in ongoing review of the penalty the government ordered in proposing to drop the $3 million penalty from this settlement. So that it's, they had apparently taken it down. They spent $3 million to retrofit or replace Woodbury. Okay, I see. And so that they wanted to take the $3 million out of the settlement.
So then it would
because
be, what, $9 million versus 12?
Nine.
Right, because they said that Harley
That's
was doing things
money.
To try to fix it.
Was it because they were selling these items off the shelf or off the floor that weren't passing the EPA or the emissions test? Is that what we're talking about, or is it
that
because...
That was the allegation. The problem was there is a version of the race tuner that is for racing only, and it's got
right.
big letters on it. I've
for
seen
racing
one.
Only.
For racing only.
It is
only.
Not what I have.
Right.
Now, technically, Harley is supposed, and they did. They sent me a thing, said, you need to come in and you need to have your remapping. And I'm going, yeah, right, not going to freaking happen. But at any rate, but mine is just the regular one. It is not, it won't
oh,
do anything
I
illegal.
Got you. So... It seems to me that there are people that are buying these and putting them on, knowing full well they're going to run them on the street, but then they're not passing. Or, you know, here's the thing. You got to remember VW just got billions of dollars in fines because they monkeyed with their technology.
Right, right.
And they're still hurting from that.
Yep.
Right.
Well,
but they were actually, they had a
oh,
thing
I know,
designed
I know.
To
it,
know when it was being measured.
I know. But what I'm saying is it would be interesting to find out what is at the root. Is it the race parts? Is it just because of states that they're doing?
Well, yeah, if you used a race-only race tuner.
All right, looks like we've run out of time for this segment. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, all you guys and gals. The next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our Older Than the Hill Chateau de Smell Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punker Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late-night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau de Smell, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate and where we never leave the lights on. Because, hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau de Smell, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau de Smell. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
You could crack a chrome crown nut. Make a hard tail go soft.
And this is for all those Valentines out there, the husbands and wives and girlfriends and boyfriends. That song's for you. Welcome back to the third segment of the show, also known as Candid Conversations. This is where we interview the movers, the shakers, the pioneers, and the speed freaks, the customizers, the rebels within the world of motorcycling. And we've got a couple rebels right here tonight, and that's Walt and that's John.
Oh.
And so we are going to interview ourselves again because we don't have anybody on the show. Got a bunch of great people lining up.
I'm just a rebel without a clue.
Yes. So anyway, we were talking about some things, and we were talking about the carb emissions and that the fact that you guys were telling me, and I didn't realize this, that there's two versions of vehicles that get sold in the United States, those that have to be made for California and the ones that are made for the other 49 states.
Correct.
Yep.
And yet Indian happened to come out with their Chief with the one that
Thunderstroke.
The Thunderstroke engine. Was so well designed that, and it's an air-cooled on top of that,
right?
That it passes CARB. And therefore, they just
make one version.
That's
they just
right.
Make one
and
version.
It would seem to me, if I was a manufacturer, make one version. Because the cost of making it and shipping it to 49 states and then having a...
They just add the... If you buy it in California, they just add the price and say, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so it costs more to buy the stuff in California. But... And I'm not supposed to say this, but Californians they elected Jerry Brown, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, but the cool thing about, I'm going to come back on that. The cool thing about California is that's where all the cool manufacturers for motorcycle parts are located.
Yeah.
And
most
they
of which
have,
can't be put on a motorcycle in California.
True.
That's true. Well, yes, indeed. This is true. But one of the biggest brake companies that makes manufacturers brake right there. Their factories right there. Yep. There's a lot of factories in California. It's a beautiful place.
Vance and Hines. Those guys are down there.
Yeah, and so they do produce some really good stuff down there. And I don't knock California. I like being down there. I love the sunshine. I like visiting my friends, but. It is interesting that you're saying, back to what we were talking on the previous side, is that certain state. You were saying, Walt, that certain states were suing.
Yeah, they're suing because
EPA.
Who
are they suing, Harley or EPA?
The Justice Department.
Within the Fed?
Yeah,
Justice.
The Justice Department got the EPA to lower the fine. And what it was based on the fact that they take into consideration if you have like wood burning stoves or whatever.
Right.
If they go back and they retrofit them and make them cleaner,
okay.
Then they take the money that they use to do that and they take it out.
Because they solved the problem.
They solved the problem.
Which, if I am in the government, I'm like, if I don't want pollution and you solve this issue,
right.
Then guess what? We've won. We've got what we want, which is less pollution, and you're not having to pay the fine because guess what? You put that back into R&D and whatever, and you upped it. So
the problem with it was that nobody has ever been able to prove that Harley did it on purpose. The allegation is that some of the race tuners that were marked as just open use for anybody were, in fact, race-only race tuners.
Okay.
Because racing... They don't regulate.
I'm wondering
emissions.
I'm wondering if you would have to do, if dealerships basically say this: if you're a license for the road, we will not put this on your bike.
Oh, as long as they sell it.
Yeah, I mean they sell the part and you go put it on yourself.
Well, but now they're not responsible. What I'm saying is, if they have an official tech that's doing it in house, and it's on your street legal bike,
right.
Somebody could come back and sue them because they knew knowingly you're putting it on a street legal bike. But if you got just a drag bike, for instance, or whatever, or if you do it on your own, hey, guess what?
Europe, you're related. That's
how are they going? How they're going to police that? Yeah, I mean, I walk in and say, I got a drag bike in my garage. I need this race team.
I know. And
here's your $800 or however much it is. It's Harley, so it's probably $1,200.
Right. I hear you. I don't know how you would regulate that. Right?
Well, then, and once again, then you have to get into saying, okay, how much am I going to require them to do? Because there are people, like you say, who've got a drag bike.
Right.
I might have.
Well, maybe I do. Maybe I don't. But I'm willing to go in and say
drags.
Yes, that's right.
The guys at the All Harley Drags. I know they're using race-only race tuners.
Well, that's sure. right.
They're jacking this thing up as much as they can get it.
Of course
they are.
And
they don't care about pollution. But
no.
The whole thing about it is, you know, are we going to force them to say, okay, bring it in here? Well, you can't bring it in here. It's not street legal.
And if you're going to go that route, then let's put it this way. Every O'Reilly's and every parts company out here who sells aftermarket parts designed for racing
couldn't
sell their parts.
So
now, yes, you're right. So it's very interesting. How do you try to regulate? And then what did they do? Stick a sniffer on one of these bikes to see if it was actually kicking out? Because you guys don't take your bikes into the
allegation was that they found bikes that were perfectly set up, should be street legal,
right?
And when you put them on the sniffer or whatever, it showed too much pollution. And then when they went back and they went back and they analyzed,
right?
And it clearly said that it was a general use race tuner, not a race only race tuner.
Okay,
but it wasn't. It was a race only race tuner. And so somebody somewhere screwed up and mismarked them, put the wrong label on. But see, you can't say that Harley, like, you know, the company did this on purpose.
So
and
they're
once
saying
again, they're that, going to great lengths to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Right.
You know, they wanted me to come in and get remapped, but it wouldn't have done any good.
Right.
Because if I came in to get remapped, I'd have said, we're using your race tuner. And as soon as we got home, I'd pop in mine and put it right back.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, and well, and speaking of Harley, I came across a really interesting article over here on the, it's put out by AMD, which is an American motorcycle dealer magazine. And basically, I'll just read a couple things. It says here, he was talking about, remember we talked about a month ago about the Motley Fool website saying, yep. Time for Harley to get some new leadership, blah, 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 because they're not performing and everything.
Yep.
And Motley Fool and all those kind of guys, you know, they just want to see share values go up, 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 up. They don't care if you're laying people off or whatever. They're buying back shares to make it happen. That's not their problem. Their problem is, I want to make more money now.
Yep.
Whereas Harley or any company is trying to say, we want to be around for the next 10, 15, 20 years, and therefore we need to be plugging along with a plan. That said, he was pointing out that no, we do not. It's basically Robin Bradley. I'll work to get this guy on sometime. But he was saying that, no, you don't go in and change out CEOs midway through trying to get a plan go through. I mean, that would cause havoc in the motor company. But what he did point out is he said, that being the case, he said, unfortunately, there's still a very disconnected, overlapping, conflicted, and competing, overstaffed, and inexperienced Cubicle Johnny marketing egos and departments within the Harley Motor Company, and that they have a inflexible playbook that determines dealer policy and substitutes for real and meaningful dealer relationships, or stop-start, on-off swinging needle that sees programs set in motion, canceled, then revisited again. Across all, there is an unwillingness to take ownership, responsibility, initiative. But, he says, Harley isn't alone in this. And so when we've been talking about the give a shift and the whole move, what can motorcycle manufacturers do and everything, he's just trying to point out that within the infrastructure of a lot of these manufacturers, it's very rigid, and there's a lot of changes in and out, in and out. I mean, if you go on LinkedIn and start looking at these companies and you're trying to contact a certain department, oh my gosh, you're only there for a year, and then they're gone. Then the last person was there a year. Former, and they're all part of my group.
Well, they actually had a release today.
Oh,
it was two very day that came out. In an interview with Reuters in his office at the company's headquarters in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Harley CEO Matt Levatich said, one, the company is not exploring a merger with a rival or a private equity buyout, as some investors have speculated. Asked to be patient with his strategy to turn around the slump in demand for its iconic motorcycles. Reiterated that Harley is spending millions of dollars on product development and marketing efforts, including promoting its Learn to Ride academies at showrooms where Harley-Davidson certified coaches provide riding and safety lessons. Justified that this ridership program would transform the motorcycle maker into a customer creator. He does not have an answer when it will return Harley to sales growth in the United States, its biggest market. Stated that in 2017, the ridership program added 32,000 new riders in the United States, a positive trend, and he wants to build on that.
So, now, you're a safety trainer, and you've told me that you're actually, John, that you've been seeing a lot of people coming in just of recently. Is that because it's spring or what?
Yeah, spring's coming. It's, you know, the weather's been moderately decent. So, yeah, things are starting to pick up. Classes are picking up.
So now when he says added 32,000 new riders, are you familiar with their rider training program or whatever they're talking about there?
Yeah, they use the MSF curriculum.
Motorcycle Safety Foundation.
Yeah, they've licensed that curriculum from the MSF, and they just do it all on Harleys, on Street 500s.
And they do it right there within the dealership? Or in conjunction with it? Is that what they're saying?
I don't know exactly where they do it. I don't know where their range locations are.
But in the article, it says they've added 32,000 new riders. What year was that they did that?
During 2017.
And that's a lot. I mean, look, that's...
Yeah.
It's not a million.
I don't know if this is first-time motorcycle buyers or what, but...
Was that just new buyers in general, and they just went... Let's put it this way. If 32,000 new buyers came in and bought Harleys, that was 32,000 new riders.
Now, once again, they now have the Street 500 and the Street 750, so you're getting a lot of people coming in and buying the smaller bikes to get started.
And they train on those, so you're learning to train.
That's one of the things that people have been saying for a while. Now, I know that Emerald City gives you the choice. They have...
Do they have a training program down there?
They have Rider's Edge down there, and they have 500s and 750s that they have set apart.
Oh,
and you can learn on either one. So if you buy a 500 or a 750, you probably want to learn on the motorcycle are buying. If you're buying a Sportster or above, then you probably want to do the 750, so you at least have a larger bike to get more of an idea from.
On the other hand, John, when I did your safety training, we were just like 125s or something like that?
125s, 250s. 300 cc's and under is the spec.
And how is the thinking of that versus what Walt was saying, that you'd want to get a bigger bike to try out, to practice on? Have you seen that if you start on a small bike and you do your rider training, is that actually causing people to think they're better riders on a smaller bike, and then they go out and buy a 1,000 cc bike? What have you seen there translated from...
People do that. People, you know, come down and they train on a 250 or 125, and then they go out and buy an R1. I had a young lady in class last weekend who had an R6 sitting at home in her garage while she was taking the class, on a Kawasaki Eliminator 125.
Right.
So she was going to leave class, go get her endorsement, and then throw her leg over an R6 and head out on the road.
Now, and there's a lot of people who come in and buy, they got a big twin or they've got a big, road bike like yours.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. So have you found that the riding skills that you learn on that smaller CC bike, lighter weight bike, still translates really well over to a larger bike?
No. Not in my, not really in my experience. I mean,
so have you thought about adding larger machines into? And I know you don't make that decision. That would be the owner.
We have. There are requirements that the training machines have to make. They have to be three. They have to meet two out of three requirements. They have to be under 300 cc's, under 300 cc's, under 500 pounds, and the seat height has to be no more than 30 inches, something like that, and it has to meet two out of the three.
And is
that's a state requirement for motorcycle training.
Now, so they can't, you can't offer a larger one?
You can offer a larger one if it meets, it has to meet two out of the three requirements. So if the engine's bigger than 300 cc's, it has to meet the other two. It has to have a low
seat
height.
So that's where the streets
and
come
the weight
in
has
because
to be
you have the weight's below
and
the
seat's
seat
low.
Is low.
Right.
Yep.
Even though the displacement.
Rider's Edge does not get you an endorsement. It teaches you everything you need to know to ride these bikes, but you still have to go take the test.
Oh, yeah, I got
you. You don't get a test waiver.
Which would
out
be
of that
a
one.
Cross. Right. Yeah, you don't want that because you would.
See, we give you the endorsement waiver.
Yes, there we go. Yeah. Now it's all coming.
Not the endorsement waiver.
Here,
you get training. On the other hand, if you got a learner's permit, you could go and take it. And
right.
You can get the intermediate, and you can if you take the intermediate course, you still get your endorsement.
There you go.
There you go.
Don't go anywhere. We have our safety tips and trivia questions still to come. It was a long and winding trail.
I saw a chance to leave. Hey, everyone. Steve Johan here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johan. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. One in six kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, the law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices, but hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of our show. Make sure to visit our blog at www.worldofmotorcycling.com and use the contact form to send us your email. In this segment, we like to start things off with our Between the Lines, where we share a weekly safety tip. So, John, what tips do you have for us this week?
Well, maybe we'll continue the conversation we were having over the break there, where we were talking about the various paths to an endorsement,
right?
At least in the state of Washington.
So let's go back, and you were saying that would be an interesting topic. We were talking about the fact that the Rider's Edge program trains people on the 500 or the 750, but it is not the test that you go in and you have to go through to get your endorsement. You still have to do your written. You still have to do your writing. And it would be a conflict of interest if the state of Washington said, well, sure, you could do the Rider's Edge. And then sell them the bike at the same time. No. It has to be a third party that is not attached to any manufacturer.
Right. So we do third-party testing.
So you do third party. But what you're saying is some of the dealerships, the Harley dealerships who have signed up for this, do they have like, they must have, because you didn't, you had already taken it before this all started. And you don't know John either because you're not involved with that. But they
I'm not
must
involved
have,
with Rider's Edge at all. Yeah.
They must have a designated area that the person goes, starts, and they ride around, whether it's at a big parking
lot. Parking lot somewhere or something.
But
I,
it,
I
again,
know.
It's in a non-street, non...
Right.
It's a safety...
A controlled environment.
A controlled environment so they can ride those bikes and practice.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But then once they've practiced and they feel really comfortable, then they still go to John... Right. And they sign up, they take the written.
Take the written
then
test.
Then they take the
skills test.
The skill test.
Yep.
Well, like I say, in this state, I don't know what it is anywhere else. In this state, all you have to be able to ride a motorcycle is you have to have an automobile driver's license, and you go down and you get your learner's permit for a motorcycle, and you can go jump on a motorcycle and take off.
So you have to pass the knowledge test to get a permit.
You have to pass the knowledge test to get the permit.
Yep.
But... you don't have, you know, you just the fact that you passed the knowledge test, you go jump on the bike. I actually did
that.
I
thought you had to do the rider test before you
got
a
permit. No, not for a
you
permit.
You can get a
for
learner's
a permit,
permit.
You just have to take the written.
Now, how long is the permit good for?
Six months. And you can renew it twice.
Right.
Oh, so what you're saying, I didn't know. I just went down and took the test and got my endorsement right away. I didn't want to go
through.
Right.
A lot of people do that. They go in. Because now they have to take the learner's test.
Okay, I think that's how I did it way back in the old days.
I took the learner's test.
Back in 1980 when I first started writing.
Back when the test was on clay tablets?
Yes.
I took the learner's test.
I did that. I went and I got a learner's permit.
Right.
Then I rode around, and then I took the test, and it was actually right there behind.
Right at the DOL.
At the DOL.
That's
and
where
I mean,
my original one was, too.
I put my foot down a couple times, and I'm like, oh, crap, I didn't pass. Well, they let me pass anyways.
Well, like, because a lot of the guys who are doing the tests, they don't know anything about motorcycles. They're just DOL.
No,
I think that's why they went to having it done by
the one that I John was much better than the one I took through them. Because... I still didn't know how to use my front brake after using it.
Yeah.
But see, I was going to get a motorcycle. And when I was going to get my
your first bike.
Yeah, my very first bike, which is a Sportster 1200 in 2003, which was had the engine bolted to the frame, would shake your teeth. Mm. But at any rate, I went down, and I was going to try to drive it home. Well, I couldn't get it started. I mean, I could start the engine, but if I would start out, because I'd never ridden a bike.
Huh.
I didn't even know how to do, you know.
Sure.
I can do clutch with my foot. I don't know, by my hand. So this guy, the salesman, Mike Fish, drove it to my house. And so
then I went out,
and I practiced getting it to start without stalling and so on. And it went around and around my condo. And then it went around and around the other way.
Uh-huh.
And then I got really brave, and I went actually up the hill.
Right.
And then I thought, this is a Sportster. It doesn't have a gas gauge. I don't know how much gas there was in this thing. So I went down the street and scared to death because I'm on real road now with real cars and everything. And got to the gas station, filled it up, sort of filled it up. Didn't know any better that you don't just stick the thing in there because, you know, now you've got like this.
Yeah, you only get about half a tank.
Right. But I got gas in it, right? And so then I, you know, rode it back, and now I'm bad. I am bad.
That's
so
right.
I decided.
You got this now, right?
So now I'm going to go to the dealership. And when I got to the dealership, here's Mike. And he's going, yo, look at this. Walter, last week he couldn't even ride a motorcycle. He rode all the way from his house to the dealership.
But did you have an endorsement or a learner's permit?
A learner's permit.
So you went down. Did you take the written then at that point?
Yeah,
before?
Took the written test.
Yeah.
I got my learner's permit. Couldn't ride a motorcycle. Didn't know how to do it. Had to get it to my house.
That must have been what I did, too, because I didn't know a thing. I just got the permit, and I went out to this guy's house.
That's why the system changed.
I got dropped off at this guy's house, and he goes, here's the money. I gave it to him. I got on the bike.
Here are the keys.
No helmet, and I'm riding down, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing, and I'm going down.
Oh, this is so frightening.
And
yes.
and I come down, and I slow down to the road, and it's kind of like on the country in Redmond. And then I'm coming up Redmond Way, and then I'm coming on to hit the highway, and I'm going to make the on-ramp.
No.
And I couldn't I didn't know how to
stop.
I'm up over the median, down on the other side, and the cars are coming at me, and I get back on over, and I get on the freeway, and I'm going down, and my eyes are just, I had glasses, but my eyes are just tearing up. It's like in the evening now in the summer, and I'm just tearing up, and I got home, and I went, I made it.
I'm never going to do that again.
I didn't know what the heck I was doing.
My thing was getting to the dealership. Once I got to the dealership.
That's why they changed it.
And they made such a big deal of it. And so now I feel like, and I can remember coming home from the dealership. Now, this is a total of 2 miles. So, I mean, it's not a big deal.
Not like me.
But I'm coming up 99, and I'm thinking, I'm bad. I can do this. And so I'm like coming to the stop sign at 168th, and I got it caught on the clutch. Oh, look at this. I'm bad. I can do this. And so, you know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then I end up going to get the endorsement, and I start finding out all of the stuff I needed to know to not kill myself riding to work.
I almost killed myself a couple times.
Yeah.
And then I even took the test, and they still passed me.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was riding with my buddies that I learned how to ride, because they told me, here's what you do with the controls, here's how you do it. I went, oh, and all of a sudden, I was night and day. I could actually handle the bike right. But they, having ridden for many years, showed me how to manipulate the brakes and do it and not rely on the back brake, because that's what I was relying on, was the back brake, because I was thinking of a bicycle. So
they're not bicycles.
I know.
Ooh.
I know why they put these laws into effect. And I am very glad they did, because I could have killed
myself.
Carnage
out there.
You could have killed yourself. A lot of us could have killed ourselves when we first started out. And we laugh about it, but it's not a laughing matter.
Well, by the time I got done with the beginning rider course, I figured I was pretty much safe to get on the road. I mean, I at least knew what to watch out for.
You were ready to start learning.
I was ready to start learning, And that's what I've always told everybody, is the reason, well, and I'll say it now. I mean, I absolutely destroyed a motorcycle. And the only reason I didn't die was because I hadn't died before. I'd learned to stay alive.
Yep. Every time you get out of a mishap is another lesson learned.
Yep. Right. Well, there's the music again. We have one more segment. As our Rollers and Runs and Trivia Question coming right up.
What comes to your mind when you think about motorcycle riders? The first picture that comes to my mind is a road warrior. A road warrior is someone who has a passion for life and adventure, who willingly pits themselves against Mother Nature and the dangers of the road, all for a chance to see the world from the seat of a two-wheeled iron steed. A road warrior must approach biking in the same manner as a good soldier, because just like your military counterparts, you will always face plenty of real and potentially dangerous situations every time you're on the road. These include bad weather, animals, road conditions, pedestrians, and other vehicles that share the road with you. I suggest we apply the soldier's way of life to our riding experience by following these few simple rules. 1. Get basic training. 2. Get to know your equipment. 3. Keep your equipment in good running order. 4. Be prepared. Like the good soldier who carries his 50-pound pack, it's a good idea to carry proper riding gear, tools, and other essentials, including a cell phone, credit card, and at least $5 cash. 5. Just as a good soldier follows instructions given to him by his superiors, we need to follow our instructions too. Know the law and follow it. By doing this, you are less likely to encounter traffic tickets, higher insurance rates, and possible impoundment of your bike. 6. And lastly, keep a cool head. A trained soldier always keeps his cool, no matter what is coming at him. You can't think clearly when you're angry. And speaking of clear thinking, a good soldier would never face the enemy under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and neither should you. Ride sober. So to all of you, fellow road warriors, God bless, ride safe, and we'll see you out on the road.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Welcome back to the fifth and final segment of the show. We start things off with rallies and runs, where we briefly cover tours, rides, events, and more. Walt, tell us what's going on out there.
Well, there aren't a lot of rides or anything.
You know what I did find out, guys, Walt? Is there was a show called The One Show down in Portland.
The One.
The One Show?
Yeah, okay. It's a custom bike show. Mm-hmm. And it's in Portland every year. And we... I
never saw it.
I always forget about this thing. And I'm like, I was talking to somebody and says, oh, they were at The One Show. And I'm like, I think I know what that is. Yep. So, folks, I'm sorry we didn't say anything on the show. We'll find out more about this.
Well, we're halfway through February, and right now, every place I'm looking doesn't show anything else in February. For those of you who are absolutely freaking insane, I happen to know that they have a thing on Saturday, the 17th, okay, called Freeze Your Butt Off.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like fun.
And it says it's going to be 42 degrees and raining like a cow peeing on a flat rock. So
that's riding weather.
I will not be there. Okay?
Is that here local?
Yes, it's down in the south end of Seattle.
Right.
And so you can get, it's Rat City Abate. You can get information from.
42 is rideable. All right.
On March 4th in Phoenix, they have Riding for the Long Haul. It's at the Shrine Auditorium Convention Center, free admission, motorcycle parking, raffle prizes. But it's basically just a little one-day rally for people who like been riding for a long time and want to keep riding. And then on March 9th through 18th is the infamous Daytona Bike Week in Daytona Beach,
yes,
Florida.
Oh, boy.
Where... Yeah. You'll see some shenanigans. You love it or hate it, people, you know, but at any rate.
That used to be a TV show when I was a kid, Shenanigans. It was a game show for kids.
Yep.
Hey, I've got last week's trivia, and it was this. The question was, which of these actors did not star as a biker in the 1969 classic road film Easy Rider? And the question was
I remember this now.
Jack Nicholson, Dennis Hopper, Robert De Niro, or Henry Fonda. So which did not, and now this is a trick question.
It's a trick question because it's not Henry Fonda. It's Peter Fonda.
It's Peter Fonda.
Right.
But they're looking for is Robert De Niro.
That's
was
right.
Not in the movie. So.
But they made a goof in the questioning because they went Henry Fonda. So hurry
That's
up.
That's okay. When I listened to the show last week, I was quite sure you said Henry Ford.
Oh, my God.
I'm pretty sure he wasn't around for it, yeah.
So go ahead. What's this week's trivia?
All right, this week's question. In what year was the first motorcycle license issued to a woman?
Oh, well, we know in the 20s that there were already women doing across the country.
But were they licensed?
It has to be earlier than 1912, I think, because we've got the... Was it the two ladies who kept going back and forth across the country?
Yeah.
Yep, Bessie Springfield, and then there was the black gal. Her name? She was one of the early pioneer riders. And we're talking dirt roads, dirt, mud.
But car drivers weren't licensed back then either.
No.
So,
I mean, talk about frontier. Well, that's exactly
it
right.
It was a free-for-all.
Whoa.
Yep.
You don't need a license for a horse. You don't need a license for a car.
Well, that's probably what it was.
Yeah, there's still some of that attitude around here.
So, that's our show. And remember, keep the rubber side down and the chrome side up, and we'll see you out on the road.